Canto 7. After these greetings, proud yet high of heart, had been repeated 3 times and once more, Sordello drew back. When they stood apart, he said, "But who are you?" Virgil. "Before souls worthy of the climb to God came here to this hill, my dead bones were buried by Augustus. I am Virgil. For that mere defect, lack of the faith that I could not have had, because a child was not yet born, I lost heaven." So spoke Virgil of his lot. As one who marvels at the sudden dawn before him of a thing he both believes and disbelieves, and says, "It is, and yet it isn't," and then finally retrieves his power to move, Sordello, with bent head, again went humbly to my lord, embraced him low down as the lowly do, and said, "O glory of the Latins! You that graced our tongue and proved its power to the earth, what deed of mine or blessing shows me you? Honor eternal for my place of birth! If I deserve your words, tell me what's true. You came from hell? Which cloister?" Virgil then. "Through all that kingdom's circles of regret, I have come. But it was only when the power of heaven helped that I could set my aim this high. It's not that I did wrong, but I did nothing, and so lost the sight of that high holy sun for which you long, and I knew of too late. Out of the light below, there is a place where sadness lies in darkness, not in torment, where laments are never cries of pain, but only sighs. There I abide with little innocence, seized by death's fangs before they reach the prize of baptism, and so they were not free of human guilt. And also I abide with all those souls who aren't clad by the 3 virtues called holy, but set sin aside through following the other 4. Yet we would hear from you, if you know and may say, directions by which we might quickly climb to where purgatory begins. Which way?" Sordello said, "But now you're pressed for time. For us here no unchanging place is set. I may go up and round. I'll go as far with you as I'm allowed, but not quite yet. See how the day declines. From where you are, to go by night up higher can't be done. It's time to find a refuge. See these shades here on the right, apart from everyone? If you consent, before the last light fades, I'll bring you to them. They'll be overjoyed to meet you." Virgil answered, "How is that? Does that mean someone who climbed in the void of night would miss what he was aiming at because of some external force, or would he just lack strength? You should not cross this line after the sun is gone." So said the good Sordello, and with his finger made the sign there on the ground. "Though it be understood, there's nothing else to hinder your ascent except the dark that tangles up your will with helplessness. You even might have meant to go back down, yet wander round the hill, for all the time the sun is locked out by the dark horizon." And my lord, as though in thought, said, "Lead us there, where we may lie at ease as you have said." And it was so. We'd gone a little way, when I saw how the mountain's face was scooped out, just as though a valley pierced a mountain here and now. "We'll go there," said the shade, "where that slope makes a shelter, and await the sun's return." A level, winding path with sudden breaks of steepness brought us where, we would soon learn, the dell's wall at half height looked down upon a garden. Gold, fine silver, cochineal, white lead, and indigo spread so it shone both bright and clear, and emerald with the seal of its hard skin spilt. All these were outsoared in color by the grass and flowers there foregathered on the valley floor, greensward ablaze with pigments. Nor did the soft air fall short of this parade of nature's tints. 1,000 perfumes, each sweet on its own, made one, a blend that I have not known since, nor to men living was it ever known. From where I was, I saw, on that bright green among the flowers, spirits that sang the last hymn of the day, by which, of course, I mean Salve Regina. Beyond the valley's rim, they were unseen. "Soon now the sun will sink and find its nest," the Manchuan began, who had directed us. Yet do not think, before it does, to ask me if I can lead you among them there. But from this bank you'll see each face and movement better than if you were down there with them. Highest rank, and therefore highest seat, goes to that one who has the look of letting duty lapse. See how his lips are still, while there are none but him who do not sing. And he, perhaps, Rudolf the Emperor. He might have healed the wounds that have slain Italy. Too late for someone else to save her. Her fate's sealed. That other one who seems to comfort him rules where the waters spring that the Moldau brings to the Elbe, fills it to the brim, and the Elbe takes them to the sea. Where now reigns Wenceslas, there once reigned Ottokar, his father, who in swaddling bands was worth more than his bearded wanton son by far. And he whose nose is of small height and girth, so cheek by jowl with him of the fair face, the first is Philip, third king of that name, who led the fleur-de-lis to great disgrace and died of shame and heartbreak, a sad fame to have. No wonder here he beats his breast. And see the other one, who lays his cheek upon his hands and sighs more than the rest, Henry the Fat, King of Navarre. We seek in those two the twin fathers of the pest of France, Philip the Fourth, hard to forgive. He sent the papacy to Avignon. The foul and vicious way he chose to live, they both know, and the grief is never gone, but like a lance it pierces them. And he, so strong and handsome, wore a belt of strands, one each for all the virtues, proud to be Peter of Aragon. Beside him stands Charles of Anjou, that long-nosed one, you see. A vicious streak, but still the first great Guelph. And if the youth who sits behind him had reigned longer after than the man himself, his virtue, all the good and nothing bad, might well have passed from one cup to the next. But Peter died before his father. Nor were all those other heirs of his less vexed. James, who had ruled in Sicily before he did in Aragon, and Frederick, who took Sicily, each has his realm, but not a better heritage. Those times are few that human worth hangs on to what it's got while rising through the branches. This holds true because who gives it wills it must be sought from him. I speak of that one with the nose not less than Peter. To them both that thought applies. Apulia is in the throes of pain, so is Proenza. There was need, from Charles to Charles, of a maintained process. The plant was so much stronger than the seed. The second to the first was that much less in force than Peter to the second. See Henry of England sitting there alone, who ruled his life with pure simplicity. He fathered one who did well on his own, Edward, that brave boy. He that sits most low among them on the ground and with raised eyes is Marquis William Longsword, whom we know lived in a cage held as a human prize by Alessandria and died, and so let loose the war, and Monferrato weeps, and Canavese. War that never sleeps.